and welcome to the X-Cast X-Files Podwatch. This is episode 98, where we'll be discussing episodes Providence and Audrey Pauly. I'm your host, Clara Cook, and with me is Darren Mooney. Hello, Darren.
Hey, Clara, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. It's been a while since we spoke.
It has indeed, and I believe this might be the last time that we speak on this Podwatch. So yeah. It has been a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure. Well, maybe we'll get to do another episode sometime in the future for something else, maybe, perhaps.
Perhaps, hopefully.
So, the first episode that we're going to be discussing is Providence. So this is season 9, episode 10. The air date was the 10th of March 2000. And it's directed by Chris Carter and written by Frank Spotnitz and Chris Carter. Sort of brief outline of what the episode's about, which is going to be hard because it's not really a brief storyline. But so in this episode, Scully is trying to find and rescue her abducted son, William. She's distrustful of both Walter Skinner and Brad Falmer, who she thinks are trying to circumvent the FBI's investigation into the kidnapping. And she's basically strikes out on her own to perform her own investigation, assisted by Monica Reyes and the lone gunman. She discovers that William's been taken by a UFO cult that believes that he is destined to become the savior of mankind, but only if Mulder is still alive. If Mulder is dead, then William will become like the leader of the forces of evil. At this point, Doggett is in a coma. I can't actually remember how he ended up in a coma. I'm sorry, maybe you can remind me.
There was a car accident at the climax of the previous episode in which William was abducted.
Okay, there was a car accident. So he's in a coma, and William is abducted, and it all seems pretty desperate. Darren, what did you think of this episode?
It's a ninth-season mythology episode, which means it is not very good. It is a little tiny bit interesting, but it is also very, very, very boring. It runs into a lot of the problems that the ninth-season mythology has, which is basically the dilemma of when Mulder is not on screen, all the characters should be asking, where is Mulder? David Duchovny has said at this point he has no interest in continuing to do the X-Files. He doesn't want to stick around. But for some reason, there's this weird puppy dog mentality that the ninth season of the X-Files has, where everything still has to be about Mulder, even when he's not present. So like with Providence and Providence, you get, and this was alluded to earlier in Trust No One, or Trust Number One, depending on how you pronounce the title of that episode. But where it's suggested that Mulder is this key figure in this sort of religious prophecy that exists involving the colonists, about the colonization of Earth and the role that William will play. And it basically does this weird thing where it suggests that the most important character on the show is a character who is not actually appearing in the show and whose actor has made it clear he has no interest in coming back. And one of the things that's really frustrating about like Providence and Providence is that it spends all this time on, as you mentioned, this prophecy that exists about the role that William will play in like the coming colonization of Earth. And it's a really complicated and unnecessary prophecy, because it's like, if both Mulder and William are alive, then William will be the savior of mankind. If, however, Mulder is dead, then William will be the savior of the colonists. And you've got this weird sort of, it feels like it's not so much a prophecy as like a code written in JavaScript, where there's this weird and/or condition that doesn't really make any sense. And not only that, like it takes away Scully's agency. Like the problem with Providence of Providence is that, well, it removes the agency of a lot of characters. Like Doggett spends the entire episode in a coma, and Reyes spends a lot of time in church praying for him, or, you know, acting as an exposition machine with Scully, for example. But like even Scully in this episode, even though like she's nominally being dynamic and taking the lead on the investigation, like what she's really doing is serving as a messenger. Like Josepho is targeting her to get at William and Mulder. She's basically a nexus point. She's a little piece of thread that ties those two characters together. And it's really frustrating because obviously Mulder can't be a major character on the show because David Duchovny's no longer in the show. And William can't be a major character on the show because he has no agency because he's a baby. So it feels like the emphasis in the ninth season as a whole, and this two-parter in general, to be specific, is all wrong, because it basically takes Gillian Anderson, who is a phenomenal actor, and reduces her to basically a messenger. Like there's a scene where she has a meeting with Josepho in a diner, and Josepho's point is basically, look, what I want is I have your baby and I want you to bring me the head of Fox Mulder and then we'll call it quits. And it's just like, nobody in this conspiracy, in this mythology, has any interest in Scully as a character with her own agency and with her own choices. And it's really terrible because it reduces Anderson to the role where, and it's a cliche, but unfortunately looking at the 90s as a whole, it's a cliche that has some bearing in fact, where she's a woman screaming, my baby, my baby. She's a primetime Emmy winner whose role in the 9th season consists of little more than screaming, my baby, my baby. And it's really, really horrible. And it's such a waste of, like, an amazing character, an amazing performer, like, in favour of an actor who doesn't want to be there.
I totally agree with you. The mythology now completely rests on Mulder and William, one of whom is a baby who cannot speak, and the other of whom is completely absent from the show. It's a major problem that they sort of wrote themselves into and they don't really know how to write themselves out of. I think once you've said that William is the key to everything and William's the Messiah, you can't really write yourself out of it, you know?
No matter how hard you try later in the season. Like, the ninth season is a cluster. It's a complete cluster. I don't know if we can swear, but you know what I'm going to say after I say it's a complete cluster. It's a mess. It's a horrible, horrible, like, conglomerate of terrible creative decisions where, like, at every point the writers involved have the chance, whenever they're offered the chance to, like, extricate themselves from the situation, they make the choice that leads to the worst possible story decision. And it happens later on in, like, halfway through the season, when it becomes clear that the show is going to be cancelled, all of a sudden, all the energy that they invested in, like, William, in this two-parter, and in Trust No One, and even going back to Nothing Important Happened Today, they throw it out the window and send him to live in a magic buffalo farm. And it just feels really frustrating and exhausting and draining. And it's like, not only are these episodes, like, boring and dull of themselves, because, like, the way that the episodes are filmed, Chris Carter is a great director. He's one of my favourite X-Files directors. But this is just, it's lame and uninspired. And one of my big problems with this is the excavation scenes where Josepho, who, by the way, is just a ripoff of Absalom, the much more interesting cult leader from the eighth season. But the scenes where he's excavating the alien ship, they're horribly overlit, so that in high definition, the ship doesn't look like an alien ship. It looks like a bit of plasterboard. It looks really unconvincing. And it looks like a standing set rather than something that actually exists. But, like, all of those boring scenes effectively amount to nothing. So it's not only do you feel like you're wasting your time as you're watching them. When you reach the end of the season, you reflect back on Providence and Providence. It feels like you've wasted your time, even considering the fact that you wasted your time watching them. It's just horrible. It's soul-destroying is what the ninth season is.
Yeah, I think there's aspects of it as well that really majorly bother me, which is that I just don't find realistic. I think that involving Brad Fulmer in the hunt for Scully's son, involving Scully in the hunt for her son, like her being at the briefing in the beginning, wondering why wondering why Skinner and Doggett and Reyes actually give a shit about, sorry, I shouldn't swear, but actually care about William. Like, I mean, they're not bad people, so I guess they could care about an abducted child.
Yeah.
But do you know what I mean? It just seems like the whole series seems to be, like, centered around this miracle child, without much thought given to the other characters. I mean, they in season 9, without Mulder, they could have developed Skinner more. You know?
Or Doggett or Reyes. Like, Doggett and Reyes spend so much of the ninth season in hospitals, unconscious and incapacitated. And we'll talk about that in a moment when we get to the next episode. Because guess what? It's Doggett's turn to tag out of a hospital bed at the end of this episode. But guess who tags right on in? Like, it's just really frustrating.
Yeah, I just, you know, and he just sort of bounces back up again. It just, it's just ridiculous. I don't know. I mean, I think, I like the idea. I like some of the ideas. Like, it's like, Monica and Scully working together. But then if you're going to want Monica and Scully to work together, then make them work together on a case, you know, an actual case. They seem like they would make a good partnership. Also, if you want to highlight, like, Monica's affection or care for Doggett, then do it in a better way than him, like, her, like, praying over his bedside, you know, while he's in a coma. And stop having Skinner wander in at inopportune moments and say totally inappropriate things, you know, like, oh, he's really ill, I'm really sad about that, but let me tell you about my traumatic experiences in the Vietnam War that I've never mentioned before, even during episodes that were about the Vietnam War, like, unrequited. I never mentioned them then, but I'm going to mention them now. It just feels really soapy. The whole thing feels like a soap, you know? And I'm thinking, is this the best they can do for, like after David Duchovny's departure? Because I actually think the X-Files could have survived that, actually. And I think it could have survived with Monica and Doggett. I think the two of them were good enough characters.
I think it could have. And I think maybe the next episode that we talk about, without getting too spoilery, gives an indication of, like, how that could have happened. Like, the best episodes in the ninth season, I would argue, are the ones that have nothing to do with Mulder. And arguably have very little to do with Scully as well. Like, I think that the best episodes of the ninth season are the ones that embrace the possibility of the X-Files being a show without Mulder and Scully. And I think that, like, Providence and Providence are too deeply anchored in the Mulder and Scully dynamic. And even in, like, the characters who exist in orbit around Mulder and Scully still being, like, defined by existing in orbit around them. That it doesn't really work. Like, Doggett and Reyes ending up as, like, chauffeurs in Trust No One and The Truth, for example. I feel like that the ninth season really underserves all of its regulars when it tries to focus on Mulder, but particularly, like, it loses sight of how it could have worked, which is not being a show about an actor who doesn't want to be on the show anymore.
Yeah, and the whole Williams storyline, I don't know. I mean, there's so much you could say about it, and yet so little too. I just don't like the idea of linking William with as a messiah child, like linking him to being like a Jesus character. Yeah, it's cliche.
It's such a cliche, like, the child, the chosen one. And, like, it's like the X-Files has always had this sort of Campbellian subtext to it, where Mulder has been, like, the child of privilege who rejects privilege and who becomes sort of awakened and aware of, like, the abuses that have been committed in his name, and sort of he wants to find the truth. He has this spiritual journey. But it also feels like the show has avoided anything quite as cliche as, like, ancient prophecies or, like, this idea that the colonists worked best in, like, the first seven seasons when they were in the background working through people. In the eighth and ninth seasons, where they're doing the dirty work themselves, they're not as interesting because they become almost like the aliens from Stargate, where they're like, there are prophecies about them and they have their agendas and they talk like regular people and they behave like regular people. Like, it makes them seem less alien and less unknowable and less mysterious and less compelling as villains than they were beforehand. Like, they just seem, they're stock aliens now. They're stock generic bad guys. Like, they're basically the conspirators from the first five seasons, but with all of the personality taken out, and it just doesn't work. Like, the Toothpick Man, who is a huge deal in this two-parter, feels like the 21st century friendly, like, non-nicotine version of the cigarette-smoking man, without any personality or individuality or charm or perspective or unique identity, and it just feels so lifeless.
Audrey Pauly is episode 11 of season 9. It was first aired on the 17th of March in 2000. It's directed by Kim Manners and written by Stephen Mader. This episode focuses again on Doggett and Monica, and another hospital scene, a bit like the one in the last episode.
So, but they swapped this time.
So in this episode, after being in a car accident, Reyes awakens in a surreal hospital, where there is only her and two other people. And meanwhile, in the sort of real world, Doggett is basically sitting by her bedside and she's in a coma. Both of them soon discover that there is a unique woman working at the hospital called Audrey Pauly, who's played by Tracy Ellis, who you will last have seen in Oubliette, who has the ability to communicate with those who are both conscious and unconscious and kind of simultaneously exist in the real world and this sort of mythical, strange, surreal hospital world. So, Darren, what did you think of this episode?
I really, really like this episode. I think it's a very clever episode. I think it's an episode that sort of demonstrates how, if you were doing a ninth season of The X-Files, if you had more episodes that were like this, or like 4D, or like John Doe, I think it would have been a much better season. I think it would have had a much better sort of chance of surviving in the longer term. And I think one of the things that I really like about Audrey Pauly, and something that I don't think has been sort of much discussed about the episode, is it feels very much like an ode to fan fiction. Like, there's a sense at this point in the season the writers are becoming aware of the fact that the writing was on the wall, so to speak, that The X-Files was going to be ending soon. Like, they announced during the filming of Scary Monsters was when they came down to the set and told the actors that there wasn't going to be a season. But there was a sense that, like, the clouds were brewing and they were aware of these potential problems on the horizon. And I feel like Audrey Pauly seems like an episode that's basically about, you have a show that, or you have a story, you have a character who is on life support, who finds herself taken to a world where she's kept alive in the imagination of this other character who's, like, built a little dollhouse replica of the world and populated it with these details and these characters who she's encountered in order to, like, keep them alive in a way. And it feels almost like a metaphor for what might happen with The X-Files if The X-Files were cancelled, where you would have, basically, the show would end, but you would have the characters kind of kept alive through fan fiction, through fan productions, through fan speculation, through sort of fan writing, through fan culture, through like Twitter, through sharing memes, through Facebook, through all these websites and all these little details that kind of keep characters who would otherwise be dead and otherwise disappear into the pop cultural nothingness. You know, that sort of Reyes stares out of the hospital and sees just oblivion in front of her, but like who are somehow preserved and maintained and kept alive. And I feel like it's something that's, the Night Season of the X-Files had like an interesting relationship with fans, where there's a sense of like contentiousness between the writers and the fan base in episodes like, say, Scary Monster, with the character of Layla Miller, who was like named for a deceased fan and introduced as a fan who became this really condescending, aggressive individual, so the writers could talk about how vindictive or how bullied they felt by fans who weren't accepting the ninth season as it was. Or even say the Jump the Shark, where the writers decided, in what seems like a feat of pique, to have decided to kill off the lone gunman because the show was cancelled and because the X-Files was ending and because they felt like they were really bitter and angry about all this stuff that had happened. So this was a giant, like, F you to the fans. So I feel like in the midst of all that happening, like, an episode like Audrey Pauly, which is basically, to me, watching it, feels a lot like, well, look, these characters may be ending their journey on television soon. They may be, like, going on life support and dying. And I think, the recurring use of life support in the ninth season as a motif is a suggestion of how, like, deeply in trouble the show is. Like, it's the right, I think, working through the idea that the show is literally and figuratively on life support at this point. But I feel like suggesting that these characters stay alive through the imagination, and Lucy, and the character Audrey points to her head and says that she keeps them alive in here, like in her imagination. I feel like that's a loving letter to the fans who work really hard to keep the X-Files alive, to keep it in the popular consciousness. Because let's face it, like, after this show ended, like, it went away for years before returning with I Want to Believe, and then went away for years more before returning with the revival. And what kept it alive in that time was the fans. Like, it was the people who were kind of like Audrey in a little bit, who were keeping those characters in the consciousness, who were doing stuff like talking about the show on social media platforms. And I feel like I really, really like Audrey Pauly because I feel like it captures that sense very, very well.
I mean, it's interesting that you should say that you think this episode is like a homage to fan devotion and fan fiction, because it was this episode that I mean, as soon as they introduced this romantic element between Doggett and Reyes, I was like, yep, makes complete sense. Like, that just makes complete sense. Seems very natural. I mean, this sort of like slow burning affection that they have for each other actually turning into like love and attraction just is very realistic and is both touching and sad. And they are much more of a much more conventional romantic couple than Mulder and Scully, I think. And well, we've talked about this before, about how unconventional Mulder and Scully are as like a romantic relationship. But I think that Doggett and Monica are much more conventional and just, I think, more open and free with their emotions with each other, not necessarily with themselves about other things. Doggett can be quite repressed about things, but with each other, you know, they know how much they mean to each other. And in this episode, it looked like it was actually going to go somewhere.
Well, you have Doggett sort of fantasizing about if he'd kissed Reyes and if she'd stayed or whatever, she wouldn't be in this situation.
And he's heartbroken that she's going to die. He breaks down in tears. He's desperate. It's funny that you should say that, though, because me and my friend, after the series ended, me and my best friend, who I've mentioned before in this podcast, fantasized about what would happen. You know, like, we had this little couple of hours where we just sort of brainstormed, and, you know, after colonization took place and people are fighting aliens and the world was ending, you know, where would Skinner be? And we imagined Skinner walking around, like, you know, with one arm, like fighting with a machine gun and stuff. And we imagined,
was he wearing an ammo belt?
Ammo belt. You know, he's like using his skills that he learned in Vietnam, you know. And we imagined all these different endings for the characters, and we imagined Doggett and Reyes living together, like in a shack in Mexico somewhere. Maybe they were protecting Gibson Praise. I don't know. You know, maybe Gibson Praise had annoyed them so much they just dumped him somewhere. But, you know, we imagined them as a couple together. We said without a doubt, like, this, they just definitely would be. So can you imagine my disappointment in season 11 when Monica turns up and she's actually a villain?
Working for the smoking man.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry, Chris Carter. No. Yeah. I actually love this episode. It's moving, well acted, it's affecting, and it's very restrained in the way that it's acted, I think. Like, so when the actual breakdown of emotion happens later in the episode with Doggett, like, crying, it feels just very powerful and very realistic to me. It doesn't feel like an X-Files episode to me. Partly that's because maybe they're focusing on Doggett and Reyes and not so much on William and Mulder. And it's a lovely respite from the mythology episodes, you know. It's like a little fable or a fairy tale, you know. These lost souls sort of lost in this mythical
hospital in this dollhouse, basically, which is beautiful. Like, it's got that sort of Twilight Zone feeling to it. Because, I mean, like, Mattia, who wrote 4D early in the season, also has, like, that same sort of Twilight Zone episode feeling to it, where it's, like, it's six characters in search of an exit. And it's really, really nice. And it's got that, like, the ninth season does this repeatedly, where it suggests that the characters are, like, trapped in fake realities or in, like, pocket worlds. So, for example, obviously, in, like, 4D, you have the world where Lukesh goes to satisfy his killing urges. In, like, Scary Monsters, you have the world that is built by the child. In, like, Sunshine Days, you have, like, the Brady Bunch home recreated, like, perfectly. You have the sense of, like, pocket worlds existing. And you have, like, Audrey has this, like, pocket world she creates of this dollhouse, which almost feels like a nod to, you know, Saint Elsewhere.
Yeah.
The ending of Saint Elsewhere, where it's revealed that the entire TV show has unfolded in the mind of a young boy, a young autistic boy, who's staring at a snow globe with a hospital model in it. And there's a sense that maybe, like, I feel like this is a very clever nod to that, because it's like a dollhouse. Like, the bulk of the episode unfolds inside Audrey's head, which is based around a dollhouse that she's constructed of the hospital. And it has, you're right when you say it has a fairy tale quality to it, but I feel like that's the way the ninth season was going. Many of the ninth season episodes have that sort of fairy tale quality to them. And I think it works really well here. And I think it works really well. Like, the best ninth season episodes kind of play into that, I think, for me.
Yeah, and these fairy tales have bittersweet aspects to them. So, like, in John Doe, you know, like you said, he wakes up, he doesn't know who he is. He's got to discover who he is. And then he finds out that his son is dead. And that's part of his story. And it's very upsetting. And in this, like, it's a little bittersweet ending. Audrey poorly doesn't survive the end of the episode. She dies. In a similar way to Hublet, unfortunately. This poor character has to sacrifice herself so that someone else can live. I think Ilse, I may be reading too much into it, but I think it's a good metaphor for what it's like to be in hospital. And it's a good metaphor for what it's like to the trauma of having someone you love in hospital, or the trauma of your own self, like being hurt or injured or in hospital, the disorientation and the loss that you feel.
Or the fact that your whole world feels like a hospital. Yeah.
The disorientation of sickness and hospital. So the whole world, like you said, the whole world feels like a hospital. You spend so much time there. I mean, I haven't spent a huge amount of time. I've spent some time in hospital, but I do remember feeling like it is like you're in a sort of parallel universe. What's going on in the outside world seems very distant and remote to what's going on in the daily routine of the hospital, and, you know, the patients around you. There's some great acting in this episode. Annabeth Gish and Robert Patrick do really well. But I wanted to point out Stan Shaw, who plays one of the other souls, one of the people trapped in this sort of netherworld. I think he just did a really good job, you know, and when his ultimate demise comes, it's really sad. And the way that the sort of like little secret doll's house world is filmed is really beautiful. Everything's sort of tinged in kind of a blue light.
Yeah.
You know, and the sort of real world, everybody, it's sort of warm and kind of orange, and then, you know, you switch to where Monica is, and it's this sort of,
it's the same sets, but they feel eerie and sterile and sort of like haunted. Yeah. Almost
very sterile, actually. Yeah, very, and almost like more metallic and kind of harsh, kind of a cold environment. And I thought that was very well filmed. I thought Kim Manners did a great job of directing. Is there anything else you want to add about this episode?
My only complaint is the bad guy, the doctor. He doesn't really feel like he gets a proper motivation or like an exploration for why he does what he does. And I feel like that's maybe the weakest part of the episode. It's not a big deal, but something sort of jumped out at me in terms of like construction of this episode, as opposed to, say, some of the earlier X-Files episodes, like the third or fourth or fifth season episodes, where I think you would have had a much stronger motivation for the character and it would have kind of made the episode more cohesive as a whole. But it's not a huge problem, all said.
So I think we're just going to wrap it up now. So this was episode 98. So the next episode tomorrow is 99, and that will be covering the episodes Underneath and Improbable. You can find us on Twitter at @X_cast or on the Facebook page and group. So head over there and say hello, and you'll meet lots of other X-Files fans who are discussing the episodes. And until next time, trust no one.